This is the Jefferson Exchange. Let's shift focus now to a discussion of ecosystem health, or the lack of it. We've talked before about the devastation of some of the kelp forests in the ocean just offshore and how important those underwater forests are to ocean-dwelling creatures. Recent research shows the interconnection of predators and healthy kelp forests. Jennifer Cassell is a research biologist at the Marine Science Institute at the University of California, Santa Barbara, and she runs the Cassell Lab within the Department of Ecology, Evolution, and Marine Biology. Dr. Cassell, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So a general question first, since your focus is on coastal ecosystems like kelp forests and coral reefs, just over the course of your career, how profound are the changes you've seen?
It's been pretty profound change, I have to say. And I've been doing this for, 25 years, although I've spent my whole life really looking at these systems in the water. A lot of these changes have been dramatic and what you might consider negative, but I also do want to highlight there's been some success stories and some positive notes recently as well.
Okay, I want to talk about the positive notes, but I want to ask, too, about the fact that it seems like coral gets a lot of the attention, but are the kelp forests hammered just as badly as a lot of the coral is?
We're just now getting information really from all over the world that kelp forests are in decline. And it's, I think the reason that coral reefs have gotten most of the attention is because, for one thing, they're obvious, they're in shallow waters, and a lot of people go and enjoy those, snorkeling and on their vacations, and not as many people put their head in the cold waters of kelp forests. So I do think, and corals are particularly prone to problems with the warm water. But kelp forests are equally important ecosystems. I mean, they're fantastically beautiful. They provide fisheries, so they're very important. And we're really just learning now that with increasing seawater temperatures, with pollution and other things, that the kelp forests are in danger as well.
That's an excellent point you bring up about their general accessibility, though. You don't hear a lot of people saying, yeah, I'm going snorkeling in the kelp.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's some hardcore groups of people, though, that really like to, you know, dive. I mean, the kelp forests are, on a good day, a kelp forest is as beautiful as a coral reef. And I work in both systems, so I know.
Yeah, it looks pretty fascinating, some of the pictures that you brought back over the years. Talk about some of the positive developments. I don't want that point to go away before we get into the specifics of this research. Some of the things you say that are going well for offshore or nearshore ecosystems.
Yeah, well, I mean, a recent positive thing here on the west coast of the U.S. has been a successful rebuilding of some fisheries that were really in trouble with our nearshore rockfishes. And a lot of the rebuilding of those fisheries, it's taken a while, but has been deemed a success lately. So that's really good. We've got an incredible system in California and in Oregon of marine protected areas that have been put in place. And those are places where no fishing or other kinds of extraction are allowed. And in many cases, we're seeing rebuilding of healthy ecosystems inside those marine protected areas. And then another one, a success story for sure, that kind of affects me and my team that get in the water, has been the protection of some of the top predators, like white sharks in particular. And we've seen a real increase in those top-level predators in our ecosystems, to the point where we're actually seeing them in the water.
Oh, so, why you're in there,
right?
Yourself?
Yeah, I have seen some before, but it's good. We protected them, and they're coming back.
Jennifer Cassell, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange at the Marine Science Institute at the University of California, Santa Barbara. We're talking about kelp forests and sea star wasting disease and the interconnections there. She was one of the authors on a recent bit of research on that. You can join the conversation on the exchange at 800-838-3760 and jx@jeffnet.org. Are the changes to some of these nearshore ecosystems happening so fast that it's hard for science to keep up, things like sea star wasting disease?
Yes, definitely. So we've seen really dramatic loss of our kelp forests in some places along the West Coast, Northern California in particular. Southern Oregon has been hit pretty hard. And it was what my Northern California colleagues call the perfect storm of events that happened. And it happened so quickly that it has been very difficult to keep up. Luckily, there's a lot of in-water monitoring taking place, and so we have data, not in real time, but coming in fairly quickly. We're able to see these changes happening. But yeah, it's been a perfect storm.
So it was not Northern California, but a little further south. You focused on the Channel Islands in this research, published January 30th in Ecology from the Ecological Society of America. What had happened in that area around the Channel Islands?
That's right. So our study takes place in the Northern Channel Islands, so in, here in Southern California. And what we found, following up actually on the dramatic losses of kelp that the northern coast of California was experiencing, we noticed that kelp was doing okay down here in Southern California. There was some patchy loss, but in many places it looked really healthy. And so we wanted to investigate why the kelp was surviving in some of these places, you know, compared to places like Northern California. So we've been monitoring kelp forests using teams of scuba divers for over 20 years. So we have a lot of data. We have a long time series. We have a lot of data before the sea star wasting event. So just to back up a bit, around 2013, researchers and even the public started noticing that sea stars were dying off in huge numbers along the whole West Coast. And by 2014, there were basically not many sea stars left on the entire coast. And that happened in our region in Southern California as well. Yet what we found was that we have, I have to tell the whole story. After the sea stars died, there were outbreaks of purple sea urchins in places. And purple sea urchins are the species that eats down the kelp. And that's why the kelp was getting lost. So in our region, after we lost the sea stars, we didn't notice huge outbreaks of purple urchins because we have two other urchin predators in the system. We have a fish called the California sheephead and the California spiny lobster. And in particular, the sea star that eats the sea urchins was the sunflower sea star. So after the loss of that, these other predators in our system compensated for their loss.
So they were essentially B team and C team predators then to take over for what you lost with the sunflower stars.
Yeah, that's a great way of putting it. We had our bench.
Right. Let's take a phone call here because somebody wants to get in on the discussion. Ann and Eugene, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking kelp forests with Dr. Jennifer Cassell.
Well, I know about the urchins being a main predator on the bull kelp. And here in Oregon, all of our sea otters were killed off. And I think that has had a really bad effect on the bull kelp, and they've tried to reintroduce sea otters here, and that wasn't successful, but I think there's some hope of trying to do another reintroduction, and I'd like to know about that and to know more about the effect on sea urchins that the sea otters have.
Okay. Otters, urchins, and kelp. Thank you for that, Anne.
That's a great question that Anne poses. So I mentioned that our backup team was a fish and a lobster, but the otter also preys upon sea urchins where it's present. And as Anne pointed out, they're not present in Oregon or much of Northern California. There's populations in Central California of otters, and then they start pretty much in Canada and Alaska where they're present. So they also could be part of the B team if they're present as a sort of backup predator. The idea of reintroducing sea otters into places where they historically were present but are no longer present is it is a contentious argument for sure, and it is there are potentially other effects with reintroduction of sea otter on some of the fishery species, that crabs and so forth. So it is possible that a reintroduction could help keep purple urchins under check, but the complexity of the situation would require scientists to look at sort of all aspects of what else the otter does once reintroduced into a system.
So you got some political and economic considerations, but also I think some ecosystem considerations. If there's no kelp forest, is there a place for the otter to hang out?
Well, our colleagues at UC Santa Cruz are doing some really interesting research right now around whether the otters would even eat sea urchins once they're that abundant. So here's the deal with sea urchins. Once they take over and they form what we call urchin barrens, then they're pretty much starving. So they're not creating any gonads or roe, which is really what is nutrition in an urchin. If you're going to eat an urchin, the only thing you're really going to get out of it is its gonads. But these urchin and barons, they're really depleted. And what our colleagues in Santa Cruz are learning are that otters somehow can figure out when the urchins aren't going to provide any nutrition and they don't eat them. So the question remains on whether an otter can even be a good predator on the urchins if the urchins are in barrens and there's no kelp to provide that urchin nutrition.
All right, so that answers the question of whether the urchins will bring about their own demise by killing off their food supply. They won't procreate. They'll basically eat themselves out of everything, it sounds like.
That's what we hope. They definitely won't procreate. The problem or the challenge is that they can live in this starved condition for a very long time. Some say up to a decade.
Jennifer Cassell is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about kelp forests and how sea star wasting disease helped contribute to the diminishment of kelp forests on the West Coast. You can join the conversation on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. You mentioned right at the top, Jennifer, about marine protected areas in California and similar structures in Oregon that help protect things on the ocean floor. And there was an uneven distribution of effects, it looks like, in kelp forests around the Channel Islands based on which areas were and were not in MPAs, it sounds like.
Yeah, that's right. So in our study in the Channel Islands, as I mentioned, kelp was patchy and urchins were patchy. And you mentioned we had the B team and the C team, and that was the California sheephead fish and the lobster. Well, the issue is that both the spiny lobster and the sheephead fish are fished. And so what we found was that in places where they are not fished, inside the marine protected areas, both of those species were more abundant and they were larger. And so they were able to better control the urchins in the marine protected areas than they were outside the marine protected areas. So basically, when your backup bench is fished, then you also have to think about ways to protect them if they're going to be your backups.
Well, it seems like a fairly straightforward lesson then. Keep some urchin predators around and kelp forests will still be there. Is there some additional wrinkle you uncovered in this research?
Well, I think that's exactly the case. But the issue is really that you've got to have the predators in the system to begin with. And the problem with Northern California and even Southern Oregon is that the only naturally occurring predator in the system at the time, recently, was this big sunflower sea star. So there are no sheephead fish, there are no lobsters, and as your caller pointed out, currently there are no otters. So then it gets really tricky because you have to think about not only protecting the predators that are there if you're lucky enough to have your B team and your C team, but if you don't have it, then we start talking about really interesting issues such as restoration of predators or reintroduction.
So the sunflower stars just have not come back. There's been no sight of them once they vanished. Like in 2014, was it?
Yeah, around 2013 is when they started to decline. By 2014, they pretty much were gone.
Mm-hmm.
Recovery is been pretty much non-existent for California, for Oregon. People are now starting to report some small individuals up in Washington and up in Alaska. But just for an example, I've been training students to be on my dive teams here in the Channel Islands in the Santa Barbara Channel for over 20 years, and my students have not even seen a sunflower star since 2014. We train them as to what these things look like on pictures, and in whatever, since 14, we haven't even seen a single one.
Wow, not a single one. And how slowly do they grow? Is this if you decided to go with a reintroduction plan, and I don't mean you personally, but if one were decided upon, would it take a while to reestablish a population?
It probably would, but that's all being looked at now by scientists all up and down the West Coast. It's really unknown. Unfortunately, even though the sunflower sea star was a major player in the kelp forest ecosystems, because it didn't have commercial importance, it wasn't super well studied. And now it's hard to study it because there's not enough specimens left in the wild to look at.
Oh, wow, that's an amazing point. So if somebody can attach dollars to it, we'll know a bit more about it. But if it's not, so it wasn't a fishery type, eating fish.
That's right. That's right.
So as we talk about things like, well, you know, maybe we should try a reintroduction, how heavy or light a touch do you personally think is appropriate in this or any ecosystem in an attempt to restore balance?
Well, I have to tell you, my views on this have really changed over the last year or two as I've seen these systems just change so dramatically and so quickly. And it's changed from being very, very cautious about messing with the ecosystem, so to speak, restoration, active restoration. And I am now less cautious. I still think it is critically important that any restoration efforts in any system, this doesn't just go for kelp forests, are very, very science-driven. And that you really, really know what you're doing because you don't want unintended consequences. And there's great examples on land all over the world of introductions of species that were supposed to take care of one problem, and they ended up causing a much, much bigger problem. So science-driven, but I do think that restoration, active restoration, is in our future.
All right. Well, it seems like a tricky place to get into because you could end up tending the place like a garden over time.
That's right. That's right. And so that's one of the aspects of looking at any restoration program is, can you reset a system with a human intervention and have it hold its own? Or would you need to constantly be tending it, like you said, like a garden, which is probably not realistic monetarily or logistically.
So before we go, do we know yet, Jennifer Cassell, why the sea star wasting disease happened?
Well, that also is, we don't know exactly yet. Some really nice research was done around 2014 when this was really happening and the sea stars were dying off that indicated it was a sea star-associated densovirus, a type of virus, and that it. Other research has shown that it seemed to be aggravated by the warm sea temperatures that started in around 2014 due to both an El Nino and this warm blob. But the scientists are still working on it. It's a little bit inconclusive right now what the actual disease is.
Okay, so more research left to do there. What we discovered here, though, is that when your sunflower sea stars disappear and there are no spiny lobsters or sheephead to consume the urchins consume the kelp. Really interesting stuff. It's called Trophic Redundancy and Predator Size Class Structure Drive Differences in Kelp Forest Ecosystem Dynamics. There's a mouthful. It's published in Ecology January 30th. Jennifer Cassell, one of several authors on there. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's been a pleasure. That will do it for this portion of The Exchange. Short break, and then we're back with Marketplace Tech.